Yeah, Doug is here, getting ready for a big day at Bedner's. But before we get to all of that, I want to remind you, if you're the 10th caller to begin the broadcast, you could take home a $25 gift certificate to the good folks at Sorgles. You got to call 412-922-1020. Also, Davey Tree Talking Tree today. But right now, it's gardening questions galore. So if you have anything on your mind, give us a call, 866-391-1020. The star of DougOster.com and later at Bedner's. Here he is, Mr. Doug Oster. Hey, Doug.
Good morning. It is definitely a taste of fall this morning. This was the first morning that I got up and I could see my breath out there when I took the dogs out. And so it's definitely the change. And fall is the second most important time after spring for gardening because we're planting trees, shrubs, bulbs, and perennials, and mums. Let's start with talking about mums because this is the time to get them. Now, if you want them to winter over, it's usually 50-50, and you have to find a mum that is made for that. Just because it says hardy mums on the sign doesn't mean that they're hardy. Sometimes they're not. And so ask. Say, you know, I want to get my mums to winter over. And one way we do that is by getting them in the ground soon, and the sooner the better. And when I'm looking for mums, I'm always looking for ones that are just barely in color or not in color at all yet. Give them a little bit longer bloom time. You get that first flush, then the second flush. And if you get them in the ground early, keep them watered, make them happy, and then do not cut them back at the end of the season. There's a chance you might be able to get them to come back. Once they catch for that first year, they're almost a weed. They'll keep expanding and growing, and it's a fun thing. It doesn't ever look the same as when they have them in the nursery, but that's just part of fall is planting mums. For me, I like flowering kale as my fall color plant. Flowering kale, the first time I ever saw flowering kale was in Ohio, and it was in dead of winter with 12 inches of snow on the ground in front of this nursery. It was this big, giant purple plant, and I was like, what is that thing? And they're, oh, it's flowering kale. And so ever since then, I've been planting flowering kale. Starting now, I've seen them in the nurseries, and as it gets colder, the color gets better. If you could find one, in fact, Bedner's was selling it earlier in the season. I don't know if they still have it. I'll find out today when I'm there. I'll talk about that in a minute. But it's a variety called Red Boar, and you'll see it in the nurseries. And instead of being low to the ground and round, this one grows more like a tree. It was originally released as a food crop, so it is edible, but it's one of the hardiest I've ever grown. And since it grows like that tree shape, we can replace something in a container. Soon, it's going to get too cold for some of the things in a container, and they're just going to get tired, and it's time to swap them out. And that's when I use Red Boar. And very often, it will, on its own, winter over. And without any protection, you know, it always depends on the winter. If you get, you know, minus 22, it's not going to make it. But it will go at least minimum till Christmas. And you'll have color all the way to Christmas. So those are just some fall plants. I was at the nursery this week, and the bargains are crazy. They're bringing in all the new perennials. Perennials are plants that come back on their own year after year, and all the ones that have been sitting there at the nursery, they want to move them out because they've done their thing. I had a really nice big climbing clematis for, geez, I don't know, $5-6. And then I did my lily trick. All the leftover lilies, some were $2, $3. The better looking ones were a little bit more. But I bought just about everything they had, and it is a risk. You know, all you see is a stalk with a few leaves on it, and some of them just had some leaves. They were overwatered. They just had some leaves popping out of the bottom. But for a couple bucks, it's worth it. And I will plant those now, and then next summer, I'll see what the blooms are. One of them is a really beautiful, fancy double, which I had seen blooming earlier in the season. And like I said, once they get to a point where they don't have flowers on them anymore, they are really hard to sell. And so lots of deals, and you know me, I love my deals. And planting perennials is something I'm always doing this time of the year. The reason we're planting some of these things now, and we'll talk with Craig Stone from Talking Trees about why we're planting trees now and shrubs and perennials is because these cool nights are conducive to root growth and not top growth. And so it's a lot to ask from a plant. You put it in early in the season and it's going to grow and flower and also try and put roots on. So all they're doing is putting their roots on. We're establishing them. And so some of my favorite perennials, and I've got them listed at the website at DougOster.com, and we'll talk about some deer-resistant ones, but the first one, it only has a Latin name. I talk about it all the time, but it has this long bloom time. The thing about perennials, they usually bloom, who knows, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, you never know. But this Corydalis lutea, it starts blooming in April, and it's still blooming now, and will bloom until a hard freeze. And so that's why I love it. The deer are not interested, at least in my garden. It'll grow in dry shade. It'll grow out in the sun. It has little yellow flowers in the shade. It gets about 18 inches tall. In the sun, it gets maybe 3 feet tall. And it makes a beautiful colony after just a couple of years by throwing seeds. And I just, that's my number one perennial, actually, because it's all over the garden. You can use it in containers because it has that long bloom time. And you get so many little babies, you can always give them away. I was out at the Pittsburgh Botanic Garden last week speaking, and the guy I was speaking with, Dr. Mark Miller, he's like, I got to get some of that. I said, I'll dig you up some. We have another event together in October. But a couple other plants that I'm growing that are deer resistant. Meadow rue. It's just, these are, they have, need nothing from the gardener. One, a beautiful little one for dry shade is called Epimedium. And it's heart-shaped leaves and little yellow or white or sometimes purple flowers. It's indestructible. Another shade one is called Ligularia. As I said, I've got these all listed at the website if you're interested in, and hellebores. You know, again, another shade lover that the spring version, the Lenten rose, it blooms in the early spring with the crocus. The other one, the winter rose, will start blooming in November. And these are just great plants. Of course, clematis. This is one you can find clematis cheap because there's no flowers left on it. And you're getting that big root in when you're buying it in a 1 gallon or even bigger. I've got that one I got was in a 2 gallon container. And so it's ready to go. You put some compost in the ground, you stick these perennials in, you water them in, you mulch them. Mulch never touches the bottom of the plant, and then you're good to go. You just want it to do its thing. Okay, so about today. At 1 o'clock today, I'm going to be at Bedner's Farm and Greenhouse. It's part 3 of From Seed to Supper. It's free to attend, but you got to register. Again, all that information, you can either go to the Bedner's website, you go to my website and you can sign up right there. I'll be talking about planting now for fall and winter harvest. If you came to the parts 1 and part 2, you get a prize today. You get some free plants. And I'm bringing with me, for anybody who wants it, now I'm not getting many takers on this, but I'm growing this super hot pepper, 1 million Scovilles. It's like a ghost pepper. It's not that bad. It's called Pimenta Bella Purple. I got it at Sorgel's earlier in the season, and I've got like seriously, 100 peppers on there, and I tried it, mine. You know, I cut the very edge off where you don't get up to the seeds. My son's a real hot pepper fan. He took the whole thing, and he ate about half of it. He says, pretty hot. I'm going to bring a couple of them to Bedner's just in case somebody wants one. Don't worry, Hot Pepper Dave, I've got yours pulled off and ready for you, so today, 1 o'clock, Bedner's. We're going to have fun. We always do there.
All right, 866-391-1020. If you have a question for Doug, that would be a perfect time to call. Still to come, Greg Stone, Davey Tree, Talkin' Tree. But it's your calls, gardening up until 8 o'clock. Doug Oster, the organic gardener, is on the air at KDKA. All right, 866-391-1020. Get on these lines. They're available, but they won't remain that way much longer. If you have a gardening question, call now. But before we take our first call, here again, Doug Oster.
So Randy Sorgel just texted me, frost this morning on the roof, believe it or not. So that's the first we've seen of that. Now, I have a couple little things to talk about, and then we'll get right to the phones. I am headed back to England, and I'm presenting a webinar on September 25th at 6 o'clock. So you can sign up for that. Go to DougOster.com. If you have any interest in going to England, seeing all those gardens, seeing the Chelsea Flower Show, sign up for the webinar, and we'll show you the whole trip, every step of the way. Chelsea Flower Show, Westminster Abbey, Tower of London, these great gardens, Hampton Court Palace Garden, Wisley, Savile, Sissinghurst Castle Gardens. It's going to be awesome. And I have 3 seats left for Iceland in November. If you have any interest in that, I would love to see you. And Tuesday, I am going to be at the Southern Butler Community Library in Saxonburg at 6:30. I'll be covering bulb planting, tree and shrub planting, perennials, and, of course, garlic. All that information is at DougOster.com. All right, let's go to the phones, Rob.
All right, here we go. Alec, you're up first on KDK. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Hey, Doug, kind of new to figs. My Chicago fig is 2 years old, loaded with figs. The largest one's probably maybe an inch and a half across, inch and a quarter. Are they going to ripen? Doesn't look like they've grown in quite some time.
Yeah, what they'll do is they'll kind of stay at that one size until they're ready, and then almost overnight they get bigger, soft, and purple. And I picked my first one a couple days ago, and I'm still waiting for the others. We have another month probably to wait, and hopefully you'll get them before that. And all we can do is wait. Now, how did you overwinter it?
I covered it in the ground, buried it in mulch, and covered it with bags of mulch. Did well. It's grown like a weed. I can't believe it's such a beautiful tree. I did kind of try to spur, just recently, thought, well, I'm going to knock. There's so much foliage on the tree, so I kind of did the tomato thing and chopped back some of the tops on the limbs that had all the fruit on, trying maybe to make the more energy go to the fruit. Does that sound reasonable?
It sounds like reasonable to me. I'd like to see how it works. I just let mine do its thing, that might work. And just keep an eye on it every day. You know, we've got a day coming up where it's going to be 83 degrees, so there's no panic right now for that plant. And this is the earliest I've ever picked, and so I'm doing the same. Oh. I'm doing the same thing that you're doing. I'm covering it with bags of soil over the winter, and then when I bring it out, the top is still alive and sprouting. If you get lucky, and I have not had this happen yet. I haven't had it happen recently. Sometimes it'll come out of winter with like little figs on it, and that's that early crop called the Breba crop. And then you get 2 crops of figs. And I've had friends where that has happened, where it came out of the ground and it had figs on it, and they were picking in July, and then again here at the end of the season. So,
I'm going to be happy with one.
Yeah, for right now, just wait it out. That size sounds really good. That sounds like they're just about ready.
And
keep a close eye on them. You'll see a couple ones usually at the top that will start to like quickly get bigger, and then you want to get them before the ants get them. If you leave them on there too long, when they're purple, the ants will get them. So, all right.
Appreciate your help, buddy. Thank you.
You got it.
All right. Anybody else wants to jump in here before the bottom of the hour? Now would be a good time to call 866-391-1020.
So today, 1 o'clock at Bedner's, just want to remind you, and I do have some questions from listeners. Margie says, my beloved peonies, some which I've had for over 40 years, and some are older, some younger, they didn't have many blooms this year. In the spring, I sprayed them with a fungicide when they first started coming up, around 12 inches high. Sprayed them once a week this spring for 3 weeks, as I usually do, and this was a couple weeks ago. They are mildewed already. This doesn't happen this early to them usually. Not sure what the problem is, but is there any harm in cutting them down to about 12 inches now? Yes. Even though they get that mildew, we don't want to cut them down. I had another question about peonies recently where people wanted to cut them down already. You got to wait. You got to wait until that plant fades away and gives all that energy back to the roots. The thing that I would recommend for those peonies, first off, we had that early part of the season where it was really wet, and that's why they're prone to fungal diseases. And if you're not getting blooms on perennials like that, like on a peony, it's definitely a good idea to give them some fertilizer in the spring. Something also that would be formulated to make things bloom, like bloom tone or flower tone from Espoma. Keith has a question. This year I have had issues starting back up zucchini and radishes from seed. The zucchini I start in peat pots outside, and the radishes I direct sow. The seeds are kept in a dry, unheated shed over the winter. Will this storage method affect germination and growth potential? Or is it just better off to toss the remaining seeds every year and start with new seeds? So storage is really important when it comes to seeds. They need cool and dry, but most of the time we don't want to freeze them unless we know that they're dry enough. The bigger seeds like beans, they'll crack if they're frozen. So the way I store them is I have them in airtight jars, and then anytime I get anything with silica gel, I throw that little packet into the jar, and that keeps them dry. And those seeds can go for years and years and years. I've got tomato seeds back to the 1980s, believe it or not, and I just always test them first before I plant them. And so I will take the seeds, put them in a wet paper towel, put that paper towel into a resealable plastic bag, and then just leave it somewhere where it's warm and dry and see what percentage sprouts. If it's more than 50%, I'm good. Is there a caller, Rob, or is that the other caller?
We have a caller, and we can get Kay in here before the bottom of the hour. Kay, you're on KDK with Doug. Go ahead.
Hi, Doug. I have a pumpkin growing on my acorn squash vine. There are two acorn squash on that vine, and the pumpkin is hanging on the vine, too. I just thought that was interesting.
That is weird. I wonder how that happened. That must be... And you're sure it's the same plant, right?
Yes. The girl up above me was growing pumpkins, and I was thinking, could that have been a cross-pollination from her pumpkin vine? Because I don't have any pumpkins here.
But that would be all of the plant. It wouldn't just be one thing. That's something happened there, some kind of mutation or a natural mutation or something. That'll be interesting to see what happens there. And how big is it?
It's not quite as big as a soccer ball, maybe probably smaller than a soccer ball, but it's definitely a pumpkin. I put a sling on it because I thought, well, it's hanging on the fence.
Right, right.
And the two squash that are above it, it's the same vine.
Huh. Well, that's a mystery.
I did read, I went online to see, and they said you can have cross-pollination with squash, and a pumpkin is a squash, so...
But if you cross-pollinated, it wouldn't affect until you save those seeds.
I did save my seeds.
Oh, okay. Well, then something happened there. When you saved the seeds from last year?
Yes.
Well, that's what happened. Something cross-pollinated there, and it just grew that way, which is interesting.
It also says you can't eat that fruit or whatever, because it's very bitter.
Well, it's definitely edible. It'd be interesting to see.
Maybe I can get a picture of it.
Yeah, that would be great. Send it to me through DougOster.com. Great call.
All right, Kay, thank you. Coming up, tell them what's coming up.
It's Talking Trees with Craig Stone. We're going to talk all about planting tips, right tree, right place, all that sort of thing.
That's moments away on KDKA.
We are joined by Craig Stone from the Davy Tree Expert Company. And Craig, before we start with right tree, right place, what have you seen in the last month as far as our trees are concerned?
We're still seeing, spotted and lantern flies have the phones ringing quite a bit right now. That's probably the number one thing we're seeing. But, you're starting to see some of the effects of the drought stress throughout the year, too. You're seeing some early, fall color, maybe some leaf shed, a few different things kind of similar and related to the drought stress.
I'm surprised about the spotted lantern flies because I had them so bad last year, and I've seen maybe three or four on my property this year, but I've heard there's other pockets of them around.
Correct. Yeah, it seems like they're, you know, I live in Mount Lebanon. It's been a problem a couple of years, not so much this year, a little further south, get into, you know, Washington County, even parts of Greene County, we're seeing them getting some phone calls, and people are, you know, very nervous. So
it's so funny because it doesn't do that much damage, but they're just such a nuisance, that sooty mold and the what they excrete. Oh, it's just
exactly. Yeah, the honeydew and everything, and depending on you know, kind of tying into the right tree in the right place, depending on, you know, where this tree's located, it could be a very big nuisance, and quite a, you know, large expense, depending on, you know, what actions you want to take to kind of rectify that.
Yeah, if you had a giant maple tree over your deck and it was infested with spotted lanternfly, you would have to do something. Otherwise, you're not going to use your deck, right?
Correct. Yeah, that deck would be inoperable this year.
So when you think, I'm sure you work with this every day, right tree, right place, but you're called there when it was the right tree in the wrong place.
Correct. Correct. So, I mean, probably not something that, you know, depending on the species or, you know, how old the tree is, it may be something that you're inheriting. But yeah, there's a lot of benefits to having the right tree in the right place. And, for multiple reasons, you know, you can save yourself a lot of expense and, make sure the tree has the best chance of, you know, thriving with, you know, minimal issues, hopefully. I mean, obviously any tree can come under some pressure from different various reasons, but yeah, the right tree, the right place, you're going to mitigate a lot of things as far as like pruning expenses, possibly, sun exposure that could lead to, pest disease issues potentially, you know, watering, things like that. So,
well, first off, just knowing how big the tree is going to get, trust that, right?
Correct. And, you know, I've heard stories too where the tag says this and then it ends up, you know, that wasn't the right tag on the right tree that they got from the nursery. So, you know.
And then sun exposure. You know, I see it all the time. I see our native dogwoods out in blazing sun. They'll survive, but they struggle, especially on a year like this without much rain.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, especially the, you know, some of the evening sun, you know, that doesn't mean the tree or, you know, shrub will, you know, not make it, but you're going to, you know, lead to, why is my dogwood not flowering potentially, or why is this constantly, you know, mine's always late to leaf out. It always goes through fall color before everybody's, and, you right. know, or you're battling certain insects constantly. That's all probably the right tree in the right place.
So when a client comes to you and says, I want to plant a tree, what are some of your first questions?
I usually kind of give them a scenario of like, you know, what characteristics do you want this tree to have or to not have? Give me, you know, as many characteristics that you know for sure you want the tree to have or to not have. Fruit bearing, you know, flowering, fall color, sizing, you know, what kind of maintenance are you looking for? There's certain trees that, you know, you're going to have constant, you know, leaf shed depending on what species and what time of the year, that may be, you know, frustrating for certain individuals. So I try to get a collective of as much, you know, information as I can that the homeowner knows for sure that they want. And then I try to put some recommendations to that. And then we'll have the discussion on maybe, you know, which tree is the best out of all of those, or the two or three that would be the best.
And when you find the right spot for a tree, do you have like standard varieties that you like that you just say, oh, well, this would be, if they want shade and it's in the sun and they've got this much space, do you have something like in your mind where you say you give them two or three choices?
Yeah. There's certain varieties, you know, that you could recommend depending on if it's a characteristic, if somebody wants, you know, something that's a dwarf variety, for say, or maybe a variegated variety, there's a few different options that we can get into that. I try to keep it simple at first until we get, you know, our species that we're looking for, and then we can kind of dive into the cultivars and different, you know, varieties that may be available and the different unique appearances, or I should say the details of that tree that you're going to see throughout the year.
Do you get a lot of requests for planting for privacy?
Yeah, that's always a big one, you know, on your back patios again, just trying to break up like line of sight, you know, so you're not looking directly into your neighbor's patio or your neighbor's home or, but yeah, usually with evergreen or usually with privacy or screenings, we're leaning more towards evergreen or coniferous trees.
So with those and deer, what are some of the species that you prefer, again, when you find the right spot for them? Because that's always the thing. I want privacy, but I've got deer. And so...
Yeah, that's always an ongoing thing. So normally I start with, you know, deer resistant, and it does not mean that it is deer proof. Deer resistant means that it is lessening the chance that the deer are going to come, you know, in... destroy your plant or, you know, impact it, does not mean that it is not going to happen. But normally like green giant arborvitaes are probably the number one selling here lately. There's a few other varieties. There's a junior, giant that, you know, is probably about half the size, if I remember correctly. It's a newer one that I just, saw this year. Then you can get into, you know, your white pines, if somebody, you know, has a little more space, and same thing with Norway spruce. There's a lot of different options depending on, you know, what kind of spacing you have and what desires you may want.
Well, that sounds good. What other kind of things should we think about? Should we think about moisture on the soil, or if it's too dry and that sort of thing?
Yeah, you should think about, you know, the long-term goal for this tree, and also, you know, the soil conditions, root disturbance, you know, is this going to be like the only path to get access? You know, if it's going to be in between a driveway and maybe a yard, and it's going to grow, you got to make sure that your vehicle can still get through the driveway, or, you know, some issues like that, or you're going to be expending quite a large expense in keeping this tree pruned away from the structures that you're planting it nearby. But certainly, you know, what kind of water or soil moisture this area can have or maybe not have. A lot of evergreens do not take to poorly drained soils or very saturated soils. So yeah, there's a lot of different things to consider when putting that in there, you know, and we can help kind of put some, you know, details on that by taking soil samples and kind of seeing if that's a good site for this tree.
So there's a tree I like. It's called Stewardia. When you find the right spot for it, have you had good luck with that tree?
I've planted a few. That's one that, usually when I bring up to the homeowners, they are a little more like, "Ooh, what's this?" Or why should I go with this one there? But yeah, I mean, the homeowners, from my experience with the Stewardia, most homeowners have come to me saying, "Can you find this tree, or do you have this tree?"
Okay.
And normally what we try to do is we will go through, you know, a local kind of nursery if we can to outsource that. But then ultimately if the homeowner maybe already has the tree kind of purchased, or, you know, they just want some help kind of putting it in the ground or maybe taking care of it, fertilization, you know, some things like that. And then we'll step in and do as much as we can.
All right, Craig, hang on there for the break. For more information about Davy Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davy.com/KDKA, and remember, you can always call the experts like Craig from Davy Tree at 855 952-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733.
All right, coming up after the news at 8 with Rob, Mr. Dentisi is here, and we're going to be getting you ready for all sorts of exciting football action. 9 o'clock, Metropolitan Windows, 10 o'clock, Acura Solutions, and 2 hours of the most incredible sports talk show anywhere. Because of that Pitt comeback yesterday, the Steelers, will it be Wilson? Will it be Fields? And oh yeah, the Pirates too, today on KDKA. All right, Doug is here, Craig is here, Davey Tree Talking Tree. If you have a tree-related question, now would be a perfect time to give us a call, 866-391-1020.
All right, back with Craig Stone from the Davey Tree Experts Company. And Craig, why is fall the best time to be planting trees and shrubs?
I feel that fall is probably the best time. Just, you're going to lessen the transplant shock and stress. Depending on, again, the species of the tree, coniferous or deciduous. Deciduous trees losing their leaves, going dormant. It's going to lessen, how much water you're going to have to give that, how much, transplant shock and stress. The cooler, air temperatures, warmer soil will help maximize, root density, things like that. And that is why we would kind of lean towards, especially a year like we've had this year, right. Lessening kind of your maintenance involved in, chance of the tree having the best chance of success.
Biggest mistake people make when they're planting a tree is?
They want the biggest tree that they can find, and they don't realize, all of the TLC that's going to be required and how long the transplant shock and stress period is for something like that, the expense of doing that. So I think sometimes they just get overzealous and try to, go in with the big, the big spade truck comes in, this big tree, and very little to no success with my experiences with this.
So you prefer to start with a smaller tree for the homeowner?
Correct. Yeah. I normally try to say like a 2 to 2.5 inch, I feel, is probably the best bang for your buck. A tree like that, depending on the species, is probably somewhere in the ballparks of 8 to 12 foot tall. So it's still a decent size. But a lot of trees, we measure trees by the diameter of TBH, so the diameter of breast height. Some nurseries kind of just go by overall height. So we have to kind of determine what the homeowner is wanting, but 2 to 2.5 inch or somewhere, 8 to 10 feet, I think is a good starting point. I wouldn't recommend getting the 20 to 30 foot tree installed. Be prepared for a lot of maintenance.
And don't plant that thing too deep.
Correct. That's always, volcano mounding, volcano planting, or in your case, too deep is also problematic too.
And in other parts of the garden, we're always adding compost when we plant, but for trees we want the native soil, is that right?
I like amending the soil, but yeah, you want to try to keep as much of that native soil there as possible. It is recommended, whatever size that root ball is, you should dig a hole that's about twice the size as far as the width, not the depth. The roots are going to go to the point of least resistance. So the more porous material you can provide for the tree, the greater chance of success.
And before I let you go, give me one really cool tree that we should be planting when we find the right spot for it.
Right now, yellow woods are a pretty cool tree that we have, and one of my personal favorites are black gums.
Every arborist loves that black gum for that amazing fire engine red fall color, right?
Correct. It's always been one of my favorites since I was a child, it still is today.
All right, Craig, thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate it. For more information about Davey Tree or to ask what's going on with your trees, go to davey.com/KDK, and remember, you can always call the experts from Davey Tree at 855-982-TREE. That's 855-982-8733. I'll be at Bedner's today at 1 o'clock talking about seed, from seed to supper, and all about the things we can plant right now. And if you've come to the first two of these, you come to this third one, you get a special prize. We're going to have a lot of fun. I've got 3 seats left. for my trip to Iceland in November, and plenty of seats left for my upcoming May trip to Chelsea Flower Show. I've got a webinar coming up on that. Just go to DougOster.com. You can see all that information. I will be answering questions after the show if you didn't get through. And remember, organic gardeners, you make our world brighter and safer with each seed you sow and every garden you grow.
All right, there he goes. Doug Oster, stay with us. Mr. Dentisi is in the building. It's the Coons Cooking Hour next.